Stein Online's live Clubland Q&A is just 1 minute away.
This is Mark Stein, back after four sellout voyages for the fifth annual Mark Stein Cruise. If you like the sound of April in Portugal and Spain on the fabulous new ship, the Celebrity Apex, well, you'll be at the apex of celebrity for our traditional week of sun, sea, and civilizational collapse. I'll have special guests from both sides of the Atlantic, including a reunion of all your favourite telly presenters from the glory days of GB News, who've since been sacked. And we'll do all the things you like about the Mark Stein Show and Stein Online, but close up and on water. More details at steinonline.com or marksteincruise.com.
The Stein Online Clubland Q&A begins right now. Here's Mark.
Hey, welcome along. February 26th, 2025. It is 3 p.m. North American Eastern Time, 4 p.m. in the beautiful Canadian Maritimes, 4:30 p.m. in fabulous Newfoundland, and beyond the Americas, 8 p.m. in London, where the BBC scandal over its pro-Hamas propaganda documentary is getting worse, as I said it would a few days ago. 9 p.m. in Rome, where the Pope's health is said to be improving, although he's still sick enough to support Gaza. 10 p.m. in... No, I'm not going to attempt it this week. 10 p.m. in Kiev, where the government of Ukraine now says it has agreed to that mineral deal with Trump. 11 p.m. on the aforementioned Gaza Riviera, 11:30 p.m. in Tehran for all you Newfoundlanders who moved to Iran out of solidarity with the half-hour time zone, 1:45 in Kathmandu for all you Iranians who moved to Nepal to check out the quarter-hour time zone, 4 a.m. in Singapore and Honkers, sorry about that, 7 a.m. in Sydney and Melbourne, and kind of sorry about that, 9 a.m. in Auckland, and an even more civilized hour for the kippers and kedgeree in His Majesty's dominions across the Pacific. A quarter millennium ago, 250 years ago today, February 26th, 1775, the British East India Company factory on Balambangan Island, just off the northern tip of Borneo, so that'd be in Malaysia today, the entire British East India Company settlement was destroyed by Moro pirates. If I remember correctly, Moro is a derogatory Spanish term for Muslims. So if you're listening under the constraints of Keir Starmer's Islamophobia law, you probably should switch off now. The Muslim pirates were usually more concerned about the Spanish in the Philippines and their other possessions. But in this particular case, they sent the British East India chappies fleeing to what is now the Sultanate of Brunei. This will be the only show you will hear today, I do believe, that we'll even mention that, because that's the kind of thing we like to do. If you don't know what happened in the past, you're unlikely to have a clue as to anything that's going to happen in the future. And as you know, we prefer to do the big picture stuff here at Stein Online. Kenneth Tacoma says, "Good day, Mark. This is my first communication as a member, having finally left the life of the liberal freeloader out of guilt for all I was taking from you without contribution." Well, we're glad to have you with us, Kenneth, and I hope you'll stick around and hope you'll make lots more contributions to our little shingle here. But this is your first, so it's a moment in 250 years' time. I'll be saying that this today in history, this marked the quarter millennium since you'd made your first comment. Kenneth continues, "So I remember with interest the debate between William F. Buckley Jr. and Ronald Reagan regarding returning sovereignty over the canal zone to Panama back in 1978. I wouldn't call that returning sovereignty. I think that's conceding too much just in the way you put it there. But the canal zone in Panama back in 1978, which tells you something about my age, it was an American moment, not on the par with the Lincoln-Douglas debates, but certainly at a level of intellectual significance. It appears through the long lens of history, Reagan's concerns have played out as he presciently feared, and now it will be up to Trump to try to clean up the mess. But the reason I raise this is in conjunction with the current situation with Europe and NATO. I would love to see here an intelligent debate between fair-minded and informed people regarding whether it is in the national interest of the US to stay in NATO. My less than well-informed view is that we are way overdue in getting out. Let Europe sink if it must, since it is so degraded anyway. I look around my house and don't see a single product made in England, France, or Germany. So trade can't justify the billions we send to prop them up. I'm kind of sick of the view that they have a cultural superiority. I think in the age of intercontinental missiles, the American defense argument doesn't go very far, but I would like to hear it out. By the way, which side would you take on? Resolved, it is in the national interest of the United States to withdraw from NATO." I've been in favor of America withdrawing from NATO since the end of the Cold War, which is 30 years ago now. I once sat next to Lord Carrington at lunch, who was a delightful man, always very good company. And at one point, something to do with NATO, this must be, 20 years ago, so it's probably in the context of Afghanistan. He turned to me and he said, Lord Carrington drawled in his languid aristocratic vowels, "What is NATO for?" And I replied, "Well, you should know. You were the Secretary General." He'd been Secretary General, I think it was in the 80s or 90s. I can't remember now. And so presumably you wouldn't take that job if you didn't have some interest in what the purpose of NATO was. But he seemed as mystified as anyone what it should be. It was a defensive alliance designed to defend Europe against an enemy that no longer exists. And again, just since I'm doing my, it's a bit early in the show, but I'm already doing, as I said, my, 20 years ago routine, almost 20 years ago, I was with Donald Rumsfeld, who was then the Secretary of Defense at the Pentagon. And he was telling me all about this room they have, seven floors below him, where these guys came in every morning and wargamed tank battles on the East German plain against an enemy that no longer existed. In contrast to gaming out how it might go against the enemies that did exist. And Rumsfeld said to me, "That's the problem with this whole place is Congress will give you money for things that don't need to be done, but won't give you any money for anything that does need to be done." And the fact of the matter is that the NATO alliance was designed as a defensive alliance against the Soviet Union and the Warsaw Pact. On the very day that the Warsaw Pact was closed up, NATO should have likewise said, well, we're shutting up shop too. And it would be for the Europeans then to decide what their future defence arrangements should be. I tend to the view of my old Telegraph colleague, Sir John Keegan, one of the great military historians of all time, when he said, a country without an army isn't really a country. And that has certainly been true throughout history. The difference now is that basically it's a conscious choice of people who got used to living all. I've gone into all this in books and all the rest of it. I mean, it's everything I have to say, I said 20 years ago. But in 20 years ago in America alone, when Democrats, oh, marvel, oh, if you go to Europe, they've got these fantastic socialized medical systems and this wonderful welfare. Yeah, well, American taxpayers pay for that. Because if you don't have to pay for your military, if you don't have to pay for a functioning military, you've got all this money freed up to enable people to retire at 53 or whatever it is in France. I think it's in Greece, it's 55, isn't it? Although you get early retirement if you work in dangerous professions, like hairdressing counts as a dangerous profession in Greece because you have to use scissors and you could give yourself a nasty cut. So if you're listening to this in Idaho, if you're listening to this in Maine, if you're listening to this in Alabama, you guys pay for that. You guys pay for the European welfare systems. Now, as we've seen, when America suddenly starts hinting that it no longer has, and this is quite important, it no longer has, if you choose to make, you know, one point, Belgium used to just be a country where Belgians lived, and Ireland was a country where Irish people lived. But now they're all semi-Muslim. You can't say that anymore. So now we just talk about values. And we just share these values. It's something to do with Swedes living in Sweden or Slovenes living in Slovenia. It's something to do with that anymore. Now we have these things called values. And if you keep banging on about values all the time, then eventually somebody is going to notice, as J.D. Vance did, that the values you thought you had in common, like freedom of speech or whatever, these countries are now all giving up on. But the thing is, it shouldn't be a crisis. These are some of the wealthiest societies. Norway is one of the most fabulously wealthy countries that has ever existed. So why can't Norway have a high, particularly these days when, as we've seen, it's all being done by drones or whatever? Why can't Norway have a functionary? You know, right now, if the Sudanese military were to show up on the Norwegian coast, they would kick Norway's butt. Not because soldier for soldier, these guys are any better. But just because Norway I know what you say, okay, that's Sudan or that's Somalia. Russia is a big deal. Not really. It's got deathbed demography. So if you want to have an old-fashioned infantryman, they're running out of those. That's one of the interesting elements of the Ukraine war. It's the first war to be fought between two nations with deathbed demography, as well as being the two most corrupt. I think it's my old National Review colleague calls Ukraine and Russia the two most corrupt countries, the two most corrupt white nations on earth, though they may be doing a bit of an injustice to Belarus. The fact is, the European Union's got over four times as many people. It's got something like a collective GDP of over seven times that of Russia. So it's able to. So here's the thing. It's not that America would be abandoning some broken down impoverished basket cases. It's abandoning countries that choose not to be able to defend themselves. You know, they're now talking about Keir Starmer's got some plan for 30,000 to put 30,000 European troops into Ukraine. I mean, the plan is bollocks from top to toe. But what's interesting is that already in Europe, oh, 30,000, that's way too much. Well, there's what? So it's going to be him and the European Union. So that's, what is that, 28 countries, 27 countries, 29 countries? It's in that ballpark. So each of them only has to pony up 1,000 troops per nation, and they can't do it. They say, oh, no, that's way too much. Couldn't possibly do that. It's been bad. It's not good for America that has to pick up the tab. But that's just a check-writing problem. It's been disastrous for Europe because it's turned. You know, when Reagan used to go on about the welfare queens, by absolving European, this is how I put it in America alone, by absolving European nations of the need to provide for their own defence, which is a primal responsibility of government in a way that net zero isn't. It has turned them, it has turned some of the oldest nation states on earth into geopolitical welfare queens, and it's on the verge of killing those nations permanently. So it's been bad for America, and it's been an absolute disaster for Europe. So NATO should be ended, and they should find some new bunch of initials for a, if the European Union, the people who run the European Union, like Ursula von der Leyen, are basically in favour of the European unionisation of the planet. And they have been for the entirety of this century. Well, if you think of yourself in that way, then you should certainly be taking care. Or the idea is, oh yes, we still have these old-fashioned things like wars going on. But don't worry, we leave all that to the Americans because they're vulgar and crude enough to enjoy doing it. It's pathetic. It should have been gone 30 years ago. And it was never good in the first place, and it's a complete disaster. And this thing, Chrystia Freeland, who could very well end up as the next Prime Minister of Canada. And she's now talking about this threat coming from America because America wants to make Canada the 51st state. And she's saying, oh, no, we're going to get together with our allies. We're going to get together. And the way she put it was this way. She said, we're going to get together with other nations that have been threatened by America, like Denmark. But we're also going to get together with nuclear powers like France and Britain to form an alliance against America. So this thing from three quarters of a century ago that was formed as a nuclear alliance against the Soviet Union is now going to wind up as a nuclear alliance against the United States. It's mad. It's madness, all this. Robert Bridges says, getting out of a bad personal relationship isn't isolationism. Neither is the US letting Europe be itself and stepping back from a relationship soured by Europe again and again. Some things run their course and need not continue. Trying to make NATO the equivalent of the March of Dimes after the childhood diseases were successfully thwarted. Yeah, did they not have the March of Dimes? God, that shows how much I'm keep in touch with things. After the childhood diseases were successfully thwarted. It's more like 107 years rather than 80, but forgetting that Thomas Jefferson warned the US to stay out of European intrigue, saving Europe from itself now is far different than past conflicts. The first imperative of a lifeguard is to not get drowned. Your thoughts? Well, I said what I thought about NATO. That's run its course. The year 1950 is over. The Western world has done a very good job of keeping 1950 going in aspic for three quarters of a century. But all things have to end. And it has, as even Andrew Neil recognizes, it has ended. And some other, we are in the beginning of, you know, people thought the war on terror, the day that changed everything, was going to be the start of a new era. And in fact, it wasn't the start of a new era because everyone was still, oh, yes, let's use the year 1950 to fight this war against goatherds with fertilizer and all the rest of it. So this is not how any healthy society would continue. That, oh yeah, we're gonna assume the conditions of 1950 apply in all eternity, for all eternity. Something else is coming along, and as Viktor Orban says, it's likely to be non-Western. Now, I've just spent a fair bit of time talking about how America should have pulled out of NATO and left the Europeans to devise something appropriate to the times when the Soviet Union went belly up 30 years ago. But they didn't do that. However, I don't agree with the idea that losing, which is what's going to happen, losing Germany, losing France, losing England, losing Ireland, losing Sweden, losing Italy. I don't agree with this whole let them all go hang thing, because these places are going to become something worse, and America will find itself a lot lonelier as it attempts to navigate through the century ahead. You can't just you can say oh, let them go hang. But it's going to be, America will find things, certain things will be uncomfortable as a result of that, because none of the emerging powers, if you want to do all this values bollocks, none of the emerging powers are going to be as friendly towards these so-called values. So there are costs. On the other hand, you know, I well understand why when you watch these, when you listen to Macron or you listen to these German fellas or you listen to Starmer, I well understand why people, or you listen to this Liberal Party leadership contest in Canada. I well understand why a prudent person would not want anything to do with these people. But that is going to make the world a lot lonelier. Just to be clear, what Chrystia Freeland says today is very about teaming up with Britain and France to threaten nuclearly the United States. She's welcome to do that, but here's what's in back of these threats against Canada. If you're America, okay, it's easy to say, Ukraine, screw Ukraine, that's a long way away. Okay, screw Germany, that's a long way away. But Canada is just across the bridge at Niagara Falls. And the fact of the matter is that its political class has been completely hollowed out by China. You know, half these Liberal Party guys are Chinese assets, whether they know it or not. You know, they're not getting as rich as Chinese asset. I think Mitch McConnell is until he decided to step down, he was America's longest serving Chinese asset. It's made him very rich. It hasn't really made them rich in the Liberal Party of Canada, but they are Chinese assets. So you've got Chinese assets controlling a Muslim, a fast Islamifying society that doubles its Muslim population every 10 years. So there is going to be a huge problem on the northern border if you and you can make a serious national security argument from the Americans' point of view. Now, I know this upsets the Canadians. It upsets me. I love the Canada I was born in, but that's dead, and it was consciously killed. I mean, people go on about this multiculturalism crap, but Canada was the first country on earth to enshrine multiculturalism as official policy and give it and appoint a cabinet minister for it. That was Justin's dad 50 years ago. So Canada's, if the object was to just hollow out Western nations and make them absolutely meaningless, Canada was ahead of the game. But the game is coming to its end. And you can certainly make national security cases where a Trudeaupian Canada on the northern border, on the take from Peking, is simply too much of a security threat for the United States to permit. None of these things are idle jokes. When Trump does these, when Trump says these things, you can make a serious case for all of them. But, you know, we let it... The point about the lifeguard... here's the thing, you know, I feel sick at heart about this. I think my entire life has been a waste, and I would have been had a happier time if I had never lived. Because when I wrote my big demographic bestseller 18 years ago, there was still time to change this. I remember Douglas Murray, we were on a panel in New York, and Douglas... who Douglas basically said, oh yes, it's bad, but there's the and we shouldn't be doing this, but there's still plenty of time to change. Yeah, only if you do change. And nobody did. They all heard me out, all the prime ministers and so forth, they all heard me out, and then none of them did a thing. So now it is too late to change. And so whatever your view of the world is, you're going to have to, whichever side of whichever fence you are, the object is going to be to try and, for the remnants of Christendom, is going to try to quarantine yourself from all these things. That's why borders matter. You know, that's what Trump has taught in the last month, that he took office on January 20th and immediately shut off the flow. And people say, oh, it can't be done. You can't, a wall won't work because they have ladders. I've never seen a wall that could. You know, people have come up with all the clever lines. In fact, if you can quarantine yourself from the worst pathologies of the world, whether it's Latin American gangs or China or Islam, you've got a pretty good chance of getting through this. Queen of the Jungle says, dear Mark, greetings from the belly of the beast, a.k.a. Nueva York. The beast has a much bigger belly than he used to, actually. And I would extend that all the way up to my own ramshackle state. And a lot of these pathologies are now have gotten within, you know, the consequences of open borders on the Rio Grande pretty soon stretch up all the way to, you know, 20 minutes south of the Quebec border. I just watched a press conference, says Queen of the Jungle, wherein former Canadian official Moonbat, Chrystia Freeland. For people who don't know who Chrystia Freeland is, back when... I first met her. I think she was an assistant editor at the Financial Times in London. And then whatever it was, a couple of years later, I was at something or other in Toronto, and she'd become deputy editor of the Globe and Mail. So I just thought she was one of these useless jobbing hacks like me, you know, and eventually, when everyone's wise to you in London, you think, ah, screw this, and move to Toronto or Sydney or wherever. But in fact, no, she had already been plucked by Klaus Schwab to be one of his global world leaders. And she was on her way to becoming Deputy Prime Minister of Canada, which, you know, I would never, I didn't, when I met her at the Financial Times, I didn't think, aha, there's a Deputy Prime Minister in waiting if ever I saw one. But that's what happened. Chrystia Freeland explained how she's planning to bring together a nuclear-armed international alliance to fight President Trump. Apparently, she's trying to set up some kind of coalition with NATO countries to wage war on our president. Given your vast experience in these matters, please tell us, should we be worried? So if you take her at her word, she seems to be implying that the rest of NATO is in a position to threaten America. I don't think that's true. I'm not entirely confident. For example, if the United States ever used its... Everything is so corrupt in America, as we've learned from the last month. There isn't any aspect of national government that the national government touches that isn't corrupted. And sometimes it's just relatively piffling stuff, like Bill Kristol living high off the hog from USAID. But sometimes it can be quite important stuff too. And if you look at the Navy, for example, look at the way the Navy, when a fire breaks out on a ship, they can't put it out. And they have to call the, whatever that was, the San Diego Fire Department. There's so much in the US military that doesn't work, like ships. And you think to yourself, I wonder if the nukes are like that. So that once the British and French nukes go off and nuke Cleveland, and America decides to retaliate. I don't know whether I'm entirely confident these wouldn't have been as corrupted and degraded as the ships of the US Navy are. So that's a bit of an open question. I don't know how Chrystia Freeland is far more stupid than, I mean, she wasn't stupid compared to Justin Trudeau. She was, what was it they used to call her? I think they used to call her the Minister for Everything, because Justin didn't really do any work. And so she wound up taking everything on. So she's not as stupid as him. But I'm not so, the idea that, you know, France and Britain would want to launch nuclear war over Canada becoming the 51st state, I think, is a bit of a long shot. Chris Hall writes, the European globalists have become remarkably provincial. That's very true. Globalism is provincial. And global, it's in the way that multiculturalism, as I said 20 years ago, is a unicultural phenomenon. There's no, if you want to be a multiculturalist, you have to come to a Western country to do it. You can't go to Saudi Arabia. You can't go to Somalia. You can't go to Waziristan to be a practicing multiculturalist. These are all parochial ideas, and they're all based on the same kind of phenomenon, which is that, which was summed up by that reader who wrote to me at the time of the big Lehman Brothers financial meltdown at the 2008 and the couple of years that followed, that we're rich enough that we can afford to be stupid. And we're not really as rich as we think we are, but we are certainly far more stupid than we think we are, that you can just do all this stuff and it will not have consequences that rebound on you. Incredibly stupid. And there's a lot of that about at the moment. But here's the big point, which is quite important. The odds are historically against what patriotic Americans or patriotic Swedes or patriotic Italians or whatever are trying to do. so that if you were going to make a bet, you would make a bet that they will not succeed. But the Trump and the people around him get this, as we've seen in the last month, that there's nothing holding the left up. It's a total astroturf operation. It's only because all the people who meet each other at cocktail parties agree with each other that they've been able to muster their so-called, you know, how many divisions, as Stalin would say, how many divisions has Bill Kristol? He doesn't have any. He doesn't represent anything. There are no takers for any of this. We've seen this. Wasn't there supposed to be a big anti-Trump dead? There's no one in this. So this is an entirely, this madness is entirely elite driven. It can be effective at that. The idea that all the girls should become boys and the boys should become girls, that's got a hell of a long way. There's a hell of a lot of mutilated kids out there just because people are overly deferential to elite ideas. As you know, we've just had a court rule that the parents of an 11-year-old can't prevent that 11-year-old from transitioning. I forget which state it was in. It's disgusting that people should actually sack that courthouse. But they don't. There's an awful lot of deference. There's an awful lot of deference to elite ideas. And as a result, they get a long way. And it's interesting to me, by the way, because that's one of the things that caused the Democrats to lose. Because the transgender, as I think Ava Vladingerbroek said on the Mark Steyn show a couple of years ago, she said it's why if you want to change someone's mind, that's actually, she found that among her lefty friends in the Netherlands, that was one of the more obvious ways in, because people, if you ask people seriously to think about that, they would not go any. But in fact, since the election, people have just, the left is determined to double down on the transgender madness. The madness and the madness of the elites and the deference of the masses will take you quite a long way before the pushback begins. And that's a big problem, not just on the transgender rubbish, but on lots of other stuff too. But you know what Trump has also shown? You can have the entire official elite against you, as we see with the judges, as we see with this crapped out media, and yet if you are determined enough and you just go at it, and his thing is all war on all fronts all the time, and this time he's not surrounded by poseurs, by people who were never Trumpers until 20 minutes before the election and then they decide, oh yeah, we're on board with it now. He's surrounded by people who are as enthused about the project as he is. And he understands that the thing is to disrupt. The thing is to disrupt. It's great to be talking. It's great to have now the end of the Atlantic Alliance being discussed seriously in the newspapers, as opposed to this thing, oh, well, we made all the decisions we needed to make in 1950 and we're just going to stick with them forever, which has been a huge problem in the decline of the West. But that's basically the situation we're in now. I mean, his tremendous energy just in putting this stuff out there is and just the Gaza stuff too, to say, you know, all the old ideas are crap. The two-state solution has never happened because it's not in the least bit viable. Two-state solution. Most hilarious thing I ever saw was Sinn Féin, the woman who's the leader of Sinn Féin, explaining why she's not going to come to the White House for the annual St. Patrick's Day knees up, is because of Trump's policies in Gaza. She says, because Sinn Féin apparently is in favour of a two-state solution. They're not in favour of a two-state solution. the existing two-state solution in the country they're living in, but they are for you. And that's basically the world we live in. I've got to go on to. They used to have Fatah and the West Bank guys, Hanan Ashrawi and Saeb Erekat, right? And these were the guys who used to turn up on CNN and the BBC. Hanan Ashrawi was an elegant lady, and Saeb Erekat wore bespoke tailoring from Jermyn Street in London, Savile Row, wherever it was. And they were the ones who used to get put up on CNN and the BBC to make it look as if the Palestinians were reasonable people. And the interesting thing now, it's whatever it is, 30 years later, is that now it's just like madmen saying, "Oi, kill all the Jews." and yet the West fetishizes, even Sinn Féin fetishizes these guys even more. I thought that was very interesting, that. We're in favor of a two-state solution. No, not for Ireland, but for Palestine. This is Stein Online's Clubland Q&A. We're live around the planet. And, this is the favourite bit of the show. Everyone likes this part of the show because Mark Stein has swung by. Yes, really. He's come here to tell you all about our weekend music show. Go, Mark. Hey, this is Mark Stein on The Town this week. Songs around the world, songs across a century and a half. We celebrate Bizet's operatic masterpiece Carmen, Australians in Hollywood, an easy listening global blockbuster, and Frank Sinatra sings Oscar winners. On The Town, Saturday at 5 on Serenade Radio. 5 p.m. London time, by the way, is 6 p.m. in Western Europe or 12 midday North American Eastern Time, and we hope you'll want to listen. Mark Stein live around the planet, 20 to 4, the aforementioned Eastern Time, and that's 20 to 9 Greenwich Mean Time. A little behind, a lot ahead, according to where you chance to be. On this turbulent earth, we're taking your question. We've been doing a bit because I do think that Marco Rubio, who was just talking bollocks last time he ran for president, and he was basically a kind of open borders. He took the Bush view. You know, we need these people to come here to do the jobs Americans won't do. That's a very interesting phrase, that. The jobs Americans won't do. It means you've got a structural defect in your society that mass migration can never cure. It can change your country, but eventually you'll import all the people to do the jobs Americans won't do, and then you'll need to import even more to do the jobs that the people you imported do the jobs Americans won't do no longer wish to do. You've got a structural difficulty, and we talked about these things in such bloody idiotic terms for so long, and that's made it more difficult to actually start changing the situation now. These things have consequences, and it's why, as I said, the tragedy of my book is that all the people who invited me to talk about the serious Butch guys, Dick Cheney, when he put on his Butch waterboarding voice and told me this was a paradigm shift in Europe, none of these people did anything. None of these people did anything. Larry Davis says, "Do you think there is any gold in Fort Knox? 1 month ago, that was a ridiculous question. Now, after all the exposed fraud and corruption, maybe not. What do you think?" Yeah, I was talking just a moment ago. I'd be interested to see. I'm not that interested to see. I certainly don't want to see the mushroom cloud across the Connecticut River from me in Vermont, but as to whether the nukes would work, is there any gold in Fort Knox? Or is it all sitting in Bill Kristol's basement or Stacey Abrams? I mean, the scale of this is unbelievable. Stacey Abrams, who is the losing candidate in a Georgia gubernatorial election. So she sets up a 501c3 that has assets of $100. So you'll know this if you've ever gone to the First National Bank of Dead Moose Junction to open a bank account. And eventually they decide they're very graciously going to permit you to bank with them. And you have to put something there in the account just to open it. So you fish out five 20s from your wallet and put $100 in the account. That's what she did with her 501c3. She set up a 501c3 that had $100 in assets. And then the United States government gave her an additional $2 billion. So she had $2 billion and $100 at the First National Bank of Dead Moose Junction. So it's entirely possible that all the gold bars in Fort Knox are now in Bill Kristol's basement and Stacey Abrams' rec room. It's the racket. It's the corruption. They've done a great thing about this. You know, the tranny operas in Uzbekistan or whatever is just the nickel and dime stuff, and I'm not even sure they're not just subsidized in order for everybody to go stampede. Can you believe that the government spent $26,000 on a transgender opera in Tuvalu? The real disgrace is that most of this money stays in America. Most of it stays inside the Beltway and goes to some of the most repulsive Americans on the planet. And we all know that now. I don't actually see how that can be unmade. I think in that sense, you know, however this shakes out, even the explanation... Elon Musk, he's so naive. He thinks just because there are 20 people on every social security number. Or, yes, technically, yes, there are people who are 178 years old claiming, but that's just so a part of our comprehensive immigration reform, so that people who are here and contribute here, they have a mechanism. Because they're pretending to be your great-grandmother Mabel, who died in 1928, that just shows how committed they are to being responsible taxpaying members. Even the explanations are just total bollocks. Janet says, dear Mark, I've so enjoyed being a Sign Club member and receiving your frequent words of wisdom. I had no idea what I was missing before I subscribed. Over the years, I've listened to you on radio, television, or in print. I've sometimes thought of you as being a pessimist. However, a still small voice has always told me that you're a realist. History would probably stay the same. Your realistic takes about the fate of Christendom are sobering, if not frightening and sad. That said, what is your realistic view of our fate in America? After the hell of the Biden years, I find myself swinging back and forth between elation at what Trump is attempting and the speed with which it is happening, and despair that it's all futile given the treachery of the tyrants in robes, the fecklessness of Congress, and the breadth and depth of the woke mental illness permeating our society. What's that? You missed the musical interludes on the show. Well, we moved them all to the music show, so there's even more of them. So the way to do it is to listen to half of the Q&A, then play my Weekend on the Town show, and then play the rest of the Q&A. It'll be just like the way it used to be. Look, here's the thing. I've said for years I'm all about the urgency, because it is urgent now. Because, for example, I heard the other day from a Frenchman, because I'd said that basically if you were talking about La France profonde, people used to think that the big towns were lost, you know, Marseille and Lyon and what have you. And I said, no, it's getting much worse than that now. You can see your future if you go to any commune with more than 3,000 people. And this had struck a chord with a lot of our French listeners. And I heard from one the other day, said, no, ever since you said that, I've been looking around whenever I drive into towns of 3,000 and under. And he said, now I reckon it's down to 2,000 people. That's the thing. The demographic, people don't get how fast it changes. And it does, and it's why the options in Europe now have to seriously include things like remigration. And what is, so it's all about the urgency. You can't just say, oh, yes, we increased our vote from 6% to 9% in the last election. So that's pretty good. We should be in a position to take power in 2057, because in 2057, there isn't going to be a country for you to take power in, or not one you'd recognize as your own country. So every time you let an election cycle go by. So what is great about Trump is the urgency, the fact that he, and the way, for example, people have said, oh, yeah, but none of these executive orders matter. They can all be undone by Biden when he runs again in 2028 on his first day, just like he did last time. And that's true. But what do you got? You don't have meaningful legislation here when you get some 3,000-page bill that's full of all kinds of stuff. Nobody knows what they're voting on. It's much, but these executive orders are, I'll tell you why I like them. Because if the founders magically reemerge today, they would recognize these. These are executive orders on specific topics, just like American legislation used to be, just like colonial legislation used to be. The Tea Act was about... it used to make... Rush laugh when I said this. The Tea Act was about tea. The clue is in the name. Now you have these 3,000-page bills that are about everything. There could be a new Tea Act in there, and you'd never know about it, because none of your legislators would know about it, because they have no idea what they're voting on. So the executive order is actually a better means of government and does absolutely address the urgency of the moment. Now, these courts are trying to do something completely ridiculous. They're saying there is, in effect, no executive branch over which the head of the executive branch exercises authority. And none of these awful judges on the Supreme Court really want to go anywhere, certainly not the Chief Justice, want to go anywhere near that. So whether and how soon that gets turned around, that every time they block, everyone screwed him over last time, and he's doing the fool me once, shame on you, fool me twice, shame on me routine, because he knows that he had no idea what a bunch of snakes everybody in the district. He can't get away with that anymore, and so the tremendous energy is genuinely inspiring. It's having practical benefits. The idea that you stop slicing the breasts off middle school girls, that's not a small thing. And the idea that you stop an already demographically devastated nation just shoveling the few men who can still stand up in Ukraine into the meat grinder, that's not a small thing. And he's having to do all this just keep in mind that Mitch McConnell, when he stepped down as Senate Minority Leader, so it liberated him to vote against all Trump's candidates. Don't forget that every Republican under Mitch McConnell's age, there are dozens and dozens, probably hundreds, who would like to be able to do that. And he's up against his own party too. It's all been wasted. You know, Marco Rubio was right. Oh, we won the Cold War, it's a unipolar world where the hyperpower, all this kind of stuff. Meanwhile, all your jobs are shipped off to China. It was a blue-collar job, but you had enough to buy a three-bedroom house with a nice-sized yard in a non-criminal part of town, and now it's fallen in value and you're working as a Walmart greeter. Unless you're Bill Kristol and your wall of gold bars is now so high that you can't see over it, beyond the grift, to the land that the policies you have... People said to me after I wrote what I did about Marco Rubio. I don't know whether he means it, but as you know, I'm a great believer in the Milton Friedman line that you don't wait for the right people to do the right things. You create the conditions that force the wrong people to do the right things. And if that's all that's happened to Marco Rubio, that's fine. He's not talking like he was 10 years ago. The interesting thing that if you belong to Conservative Inc., I can't get over all the people that I worked with in the 1990s and the aughts who are now essentially Democrats. Max Boot from the Wall Street Journal, whom Tucker always used to enjoy mocking. Max Boot is a Democrat, even though his wife has been convicted of being a South Korean asset. As far as I know, last time I looked, he was still a columnist at the Washington Post. But he's not the Max Boot I used to know. If you look at David Frum, we had this back in, I think I've said this on air, back in the 90s, when a group of us were all sitting around and talking about who was going to be the first, in Toronto this was, who was the first person to abandon conservatism, and we all decided it would be David Frum. And you look at what he's doing now. And then if you look at Bill Kristol, who's doing the Weekly Standard and the Project for the New American Century and all the rest of it. Conservatism isn't a thing that exists in its own reality apart from the citizenry of the nation you purport to be coming up with systems of government for. Hart Leonard says, sorry if I'm going a bit long, I apologize for that. I've been amazed at the miraculous efforts and results of Trump and his team in little more than 5 weeks in office. Truly stunning to observe. And yet, I must say that there are certain bits and pieces emerging from the administration that are concerning. My latest concern is the proposition of a $5 million gold card, a path to citizenship, that's being sold as a way to reduce the debt. While our national debt is surely a huge problem for our country's survival, is this the way to do it? Selling citizenships to people who don't give a flip about this country except for the money they can make here. Didn't we already do this with Mr. Soros, or am I mistaken? Maybe the way to view it is that the overall positives outweigh the negatives so far, but I strongly disagree with the president on this, says Hart Leonard. Yeah, so do I. I don't know how serious it is. Effectively, wealthy people can buy their way into countries anyway. And they already have. What was the name of the program I got admitted to America? I think it's called the Extraordinary Ability Program. And I was a bit worried. I said to my immigration lawyer, I was a bit worried that perhaps I wasn't quite as extraordinary as he seemed to think. And he said, I've always found the biggest obstacle to a successful extraordinary ability application is the modesty of my clients. But the idea I mean, for a start, it shouldn't be all that. I mean, there's like 173 different immigration programs, and that could do with cutting down to size. But the fact is, it's about the people. This idea, and if you change the... I just came past something. Somebody was quoting Adam Smith. There is a deal of ruin in a great deal of ruin in a nation. In other words, you know, the fundamental things apply as time goes by, and that in the end, you know, great nations can always recover and always not when you change the people. Adam Smith is was talking about Britain at the time of the Revolutionary War in America, the rebellious colonists. Someone had said to him, oh, England will never recover from this. England is ruined. And he said, there's a great deal of ruin in the nation. Not if you change the people. You know, so Adam Smith's observation is completely irrelevant to the present day United Kingdom. Actually, to the pre-1922 United Kingdom, because Ireland is as bonkers about this bollocks as England, Scotland, Wales, or Ulster. So this is never... for example, if you have a situation where the second city of England is now 30% Muslim, Birmingham, Adam Smith doesn't apply. Not just because no one knows who Adam Smith is, but just because the people are different. Adam Smith, if you parachuted him into Birmingham today, would say, whoa, there's a great deal of ruin in a nation, but not this much. You know, so that changes everything. And that's why the $5 million, that's the side of Trump that says we're going to have a big, beautiful, I'm going to build a wall and there's going to be a big, beautiful door in it. I don't personally agree with that. You lose an awful lot. I mean, I get told off by you baby boomer rock types because I don't do the old baby boomer rock. I played some, what was it? I played an easy listening version of White A Shade of Pale and some other Layla, and I never heard the end of it from you. Why don't you worry about what's going to be on the radio? And you're not going to have any boomer classic rock oldies stations in your own town, because the people who are moving into those towns don't dig it. I've got to get a jingle made. As I said 20 years ago on the Mark Stein Show, it's the 20 years ago moment. As I said 20 years ago, this was to do with some nice theatre in Vancouver that closed down. Everyone loved this theatre because it put on, you know, all the shows that people used to like to go and see. Noel Coward and Bernard Shaw and Oscar Wilde. Beautiful stuff. But then Vancouver became Hongkoover. They took in all these people from Hong Kong, and suddenly nobody could afford the houses because the houses were all being bought by wealthy Chinese flying in, and they didn't happen to have any interest in Oscar Wilde and Noel Coward saying amusing things on stage for a couple of hours. You don't just lose your future, you lose your past too. And in the end, again, it's a structure. There should be ways for individuals to migrate. But there mostly are. If you've got the money of George Soros or whoever it is, you can find ways around, you know, total immigration. I mean, you might find it difficult, you know, going and living in Mecca. But other than that, he can basically pick where he wants to live. Nobody now needs the issue is mass migration, legal or illegal. Nobody needs it. It's transforming. It's transformative. So you don't even have the what I always call the consolations of culture. What's so sad is when people, oh, the greatest generation, oh, we'll meet again, there'll always be an... All the people that you venerate on D-Day once every 5 years, on the D-Day anniversary once every 5 years, are ending their lives in a wholly foreign land. You know, it's not even just the stabbings and the child rape in somewhere like Bradford. It's the fact that it's now, what was the Rupert Brooke line, that there's a corner of a foreign field that is forever England? No. Now, up and down the land, there's corners of English fields that are forever foreign. It's just disgusting. As I said, people, the elites who are in favour of this, like that bozo from The Spectator, what was his name? Fraser Nelson. All these people, you know, Rachel Maddow, actually. Someone asked, I think I saw there's a letter about her or something, but Rachel Maddow, when she's doing that, Joy Reid is the greatest human being I've ever worked with and all that. And I just think it's disgusting what my bosses have done to her. I'm not even now, Joy Reid hates white people. But the first, I didn't know Joy Reid until I was doing that 7 o'clock show on Fox. And so the following day, I'd look and see whether we'd kicked Joy Reid's butt in the ratings. And if that was the first time I sort of took any interest in her. She does, I think, fairly obviously hate homosexuals, hence all those homophobic tweets and all the rest of it. But I thought, I'm a very shallow person, so I was looking at one of these TV ratings things, and so over the Joy Reid show, they had a picture of her with this big hair. And I thought she looked pretty cute with the big hair. I think she shaved it all off and looks as anti-white as, in fact, she is now, because she looks incredibly fierce and hostile. But Rachel Maddow was denouncing her bosses for cancelling a show by a woman of colour and saying it's completely, and keeping, you know, the white lesbian, Rachel Maddow. Rachel Maddow lives in a town in Massachusetts whose black population is 0.0%, or if you prefer, 0.0%. There are no black people, which even in, you have to actually look quite hard to find a town that's that whitey-whitey white. And like Rachel Maddow goes, oh, I think it's out getting rid of the of Joy Reid, a woman of colour. She doesn't have any women of colour living within miles of her. It's all rubbish, all this. You know, you talk about it, we waste so much time on this rubbish. Chris Davis says, Mark, I hope you're well. It would be easy to drown in the depths of despair as the acceleration of Western decline continues unabated. Whilst Trump is getting almost everything right, aside from inexplicably sharing air with Bill Gates, the UK is now a free speech wasteland, and despite the increase in vote share for the AfD in Germany, they have just become the latest country to spurn the opportunity to slow the rate of terrorist atrocities and rape gangs marauding through their cantons. Channeling your inner Rush, unless I'm very much mistaken, it's time, isn't it? I think you're referring to Rush's famous line that I'll tell you when it's time to panic. It's not all a numbers game. I say this quite a lot, but it's important to remember this. It's where the energy is, and it's almost the entire history of storytelling is about guys who beat the odds. Yeah, that's true of the American Revolution. When you look at the number of people in New York who were loyalists and the number who were revolutionaries, America should still be in the British Commonwealth now. But it's the people who want it who make things happen. And it's on that front that I'm... Right now, people are all over Europe have basically changed what they do in order not to attract the attention of the guys who are making the running. They don't go out after a certain hour at night, and they change their patterns of behavior. So what that does is tell people, like in France, you know, they used to say France was, what was it, 10% Muslim 20 years ago? I don't know what it is now, but you say that, and people think, oh, this is great. If you look at how scared they are now, when we are only 6% of the population, imagine how scared they will be when we're 15% of the population. Jonathan Kay mocked me for this when he came up with, he found some poll in Canada where Canadians thought Muslims were 42% of the population or whatever. And he goes, and he just is, they've been listening to too much Mark Stein. No, it's not like that. It's because Muslims, as you see now, Jonathan, who wouldn't write that today, but it's when you go to the center of any Canadian city, when you look at the control, Muslims prioritize their control of the public space. So when it comes to things like what Keir Starmer did after those poor little girls were slaughtered by a Muslim who'd ordered the Al-Qaeda bomb-making book, who downloaded it from that American guy. What that tells, the fact that the Muslims are never punished, and the fact that people are arrested in Britain for social media posts. I mean, I do think Britain is lost. I was just looking today at some, I think it was a tweet of the King and Queen celebrating the end of Ramadan with whatever it was. Oh, dates. That's supposed to be the first thing you do when Ramadan ends. Write this down. It may not seem important now, but it will in another 18 months. And I was just thinking, the pandering seems harmless if you're a nitwit like the King. But it isn't really, because they regard that as the new base. We are talking the King and Queen into observing the end of Ramadan. So next time round, we will get them to observe the whole of Ramadan. That becomes the new baseline. So I do think that some of these countries are totally lost, and that whatever, if there is a happy ending, it will be something new. And quite what that happy ending is difficult to see. Scott Scherzer writes from Miami Beach and says, "Dear Mark, it seems as though history shows us that there is no form of government that lasts forever. Monarchies, oligarchies, and aristocracies have come and gone, and democracy was supposed to be the terminus of that arc of history we hear so much about. No serious person thought that. That if you read... It's not just that the end of history is a stupid book title. It's that if you actually read that and try to take it serious, it's impossible." Scott continues, "Although throughout the West, democracy is proving anything but. For the past century, it has been bureaucracies that have been calling the shots, and the voice of the people has been muted. With the election of Donald Trump, I'm not sure if we are witnessing a rebirth of democracy or some new form of government. With what has transpired these past 6 weeks, the president is showing that there might no longer be a need for the legislative and judicial branches of the federal government, as they act mainly as an impediment to change. Lately, I've come to believe that the form of government any nation has is less important than the people in charge of it. Do you think we've passed the point where democracy or a constitutional republic is capable of leading the West out of its funk, or will it take strong men such as Donald Trump to lead us out of our morass?" You should never bet the future on three or four remarkable individuals, because if that's the case, getting rid of them puts you back where you what is the problem in a system of responsible government, particularly in the, you know, if I look at what I said in After America, you don't need a president for life if you've got a bureaucracy for life. We're seeing that in action a bit in Washington right now. I would also say, if you look back to the difference between, everybody knows that, you know, my favorite period when people, I think, were certainly the freest were between the revolutions of 1848 and the outbreak of the Great War in 1914. And what has happened over the last century is that people have gotten used to becoming dependents. And if you're a dependent, you think differently. You don't think like a freeborn citizen anymore. And if you do it on the scale that has happened across much of the Western world, then you have the situation where entire nation states think as dependents. That's what we saw in Europe when J.D. Vance was at that conference. That's what we saw, really, with Chrystia Freeland. Chrystia Freeland could have said, I'm proud to be a Canadian. I'm not going to be threatened by Donald Trump. And if I know my fellow Canadians, I know this, that they will remember that if Donald Trump does attempt to send his stormtroopers across the 49th parallel, we will remember the words of Winston Churchill. You can always take one with you. She could have done that. It's true that now America is threatening us. So I've just been on the phone to Paris and London to see if they'd be interested in using their nuclear I'm so used to thinking like a dependent. I've been dependent on America for so long that I'd now like to be dependent on London and Paris for the next few years. And this is really the huge change over the last century. And that's why these are the people. If you look at those German election results, the reason the East voted for the AfD is because they haven't been living with the crap for as long as West Germany has. By the time West Germany says, oh yes, I think I'm finally getting over my aversion to the AfD because they're all a bit icky and right wing, and I'm now, by the time you do that, you'll be living in Krautistan. There won't be a Germany to save because of people like you. That's the point. And that's a fantastically cheery note. I am actually quite a... What the difference between what is going on in Washington and what is going on in Berlin right now is so fantastic. And even the trolling, you know, the fact that he's just waging war on every front because he knows that the district court judge in Dead Moose Junction can't wait to strike down whatever executive order. You know, Americans have a choice. I've been up before more judges in America than I've been up before in the rest of the world combined. And with really two or three exceptions, they're extremely low grade. There was one arbitrator I had who I would rather have on the Supreme Court than any of the recent Republican appointees. But other than that, they've been extremely low grade. And the idea that is, oh yes, we have these things called elections, and elections have consequences, which is why we then have judges to ensure there are no consequences and everyone just goes on as before. You know, in the end, you're going to have to sack courthouses. If these judges don't get the... If these... there are all kinds of things you could do. You could say, oh, it has to be a three-man panel. If you're dealing with matters of... if you're striking down national policy in your little rinky-dink courthouse in Dead Moose Junction, you can't do that unless you do this, blah, 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 blah. In fact, you can't do this. It's like I've never, there is, a, I was told this because I couldn't get over how different when I had the cockwomble, Carrie Katz, when he was suing me in multiple jurisdictions. And what was interesting was that although we were in all these federal courts and subject to federal jurisdiction, the laws were all different because the federal court in Nevada followed whatever it was Nevada standards on, you know, free speech or whatever the issue is. There's actually very little American law, hardly any. There's hardly any there's hardly any body of American law that applies in the same way from Maine to Hawaii, except if you're some rinky-dink district court judge who wants to strike down whatever it is that a president you dislike happens to be doing. I've gone long, and I apologize for that. It's because we lost half the show last week for some mysterious reason, so we're trying to give you a bit more of a bonus. But I thank you for all your questions. That's going to do it for today. I will be back in audio on Friday with Tales for Our Time, but do stick with Stein Online for our regular Thursday date with Laura's Links, because Laura Rosen-Cohen is going to round up the internet as only she can. If you are still toying with the pros and cons of joining the Mark Stein Club, come on in. The water is fine. Stay safe, stay free.
Mark Stein's Clubland Q&A is a production of Mark Stein Enterprises and Oak Hill Media. All rights reserved.